Welcome into a new episode of the Bengals Beat podcast. I'm Kelsey Conway here with my co-host, Mike Hilton.
What's up?
A very special guest in studio continuing on with our interviews. This time we decided to not have a Mike interview a player, but one of our favorite people in the Bengals building. And yeah, Cam Taylor Britt kind of like gave him a new name. You could call him defensive coordinator Lou Anarumo. You could go, what was the nickname Vaughn gave you? That mad scientist. Yeah, and Cam Taylor Britt, I believe, called you a Houdini. Any of those three we can call you. But we're very excited to have Lou Anarumo in studio today. And I guess we'll just start with, what do you think of our setup here?
Oh, I love it. This is great. I'm blown away by your view of,
beautiful
what,
view.
Of the stadium. But this building's great, and this is awesome. You guys together, it's great.
How much have you seen players in the media? The number, I feel like, of players getting into media careers after they're done playing has got to be way more now compared to when you first started coaching in the NFL, right?
Yeah, it's huge. Matter of fact, got home last night and I'm watching, turned on NFL Network real quick, and there's Ndamukong Suh. Mm-hmm. You know, he's doing like a guest star or whatever, host for the week. And, you know, I think just a great transition. So, you know, it's nice to sit there and talk about it. And then, you know, you get critiqued by somebody, I guess, but at least it's not by the world.
That's yeah. Sure. Well, so the whole idea here is obviously, and you know, being around Mike, he's just such a personable, charismatic person. And I know in just small talks with him, he had said, I want to get into media when he's done playing. So I was like, well, why don't we team up and do an off-season podcast together and just kind of see how you like it? And more people will be willing to come on if he's sitting next to me than me. So it works out for both of us.
Absolutely. Yeah. Mike's great. As you know, as we all know, great personality. And this next part of his life will be great for him. I believe that.
Appreciate it, Lou.
But you have him for some time. We're not talking
not
about
it. Yeah. No. This is his, you know, he's spring training, whatever. He's just getting loosened up.
I actually just read an article about Jason Kelsey just did the NFL Network broadcast boot camp.
Really?
And he went out to LA and it's like a 3-day boot camp where they put you on screen and they record you. And that's when they give you like feedback for when you want to get into that part of your career. And I mean, take it from someone who was, I mean, I don't remember, was Jason Kelsey what he is now when he came in? Like, did everybody think he was going to be that good of a center? He made a whole career for himself post playing as a center because of his media stuff.
Yeah. You know, he's always been a good player. And my son was just showing me the other day at the house, or maybe it was my daughter, I forget, their podcast that they do, the two brothers.
We're coming for it, Mike.
And I was the one that they did about the head coaches.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know,
the picture.
That was so funny.
It was
some good comedy there.
Yeah, Travis Kelsey didn't even know who Zach Taylor was in the picture.
I'm with Mike on that one.
Yeah. No, it's a great podcast. Shout out to those former UC Bearcats.
For some reason, I just think it's a smooth transition for NFL athletes to the media because we're involved with them so much through our career and we make connections. And, you know, you just kind of find the right niche for you, whether it's on TV, behind the mic, on the podcast. It's just, you know, guys find what works for.
Why do you guys think that there's a perception at first for some that being yourself in the media isn't worth it for you? I don't know, because I feel like there's some players like you who are, you know, and Ted Karras and a lot of guys on the locker room are so willing to talk to the media and do things, and you see it really help them. But then there's also some that are just, I'd rather not.
You know, just some people that really don't want to be involved with the media. You know, obviously they might be introverts or whatever, but, you know, it's just – Some media is good media and some media is bad media, and some players want to stay away from it, but others want to get involved. So it's just the nature of their person.
You have any
thoughts? No, I agree 100%. It's each individual's personality. Some are more comfortable sitting behind here, and others, you know, like, get me away from it. And natural you know, us as humans are going to get away from the things you don't like. And yep. So guys just shy away from it. I think if they're not truly comfortable in front of the camera or behind the microphone.
Yeah. I don't know. I always just thought, like, especially with social media taking off in the way that it has, like, obviously more players are understanding of it when they come in. Mm-hmm. But I just always wondered why. Mm-hmm. Like, has someone gotten just a bad experience that's kind of, like, plagued the players? I just wanted to get your feedback on it. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, some people, I guess,
Think of Marshawn Lynch. I'm pretty sure during his interviews, he just didn't want to be here because he'll get fined. So it's like he's just one of the guys that really didn't want to be involved with the media, which is probably who he is as a person.
Well, for the most part, I mean, your locker room is – most of the players are willing and want to do the media, so we don't have that issue. But when you're looking at players in free agency or in the draft, are you able – like, did you know Mike was going to be the kind of media star he's going to be? Like, is that something you can tell on his personality?
I don't think that's on the checklist of things to say, hey – you know, this guy's going to really be good for us in the media.
Were first meeting him with his personality, of course. Can you tell?
You can tell, you know, right away who the guys that are a little bit more bubbly personalities and, you know, a little more outgoing for sure. You know, and we had a great – there's me, you, Cheeto, Trey. There's a couple offensive guys too.
But our table,
was
us three.
Yeah, that was our table and kind of talked about – it was almost.
Oh, is this the free agency dinner?
Yeah.
Tell me about that.
Infamous free agency dinner. But to me, that was like we were at Jeff Ruiz. We had the precinct and upstairs, and
maybe they'll sponsor the podcast, Mike.
Yeah,
hopefully.
Mr. Ruby always does a great job taking care of all of us. But that dinner was to me. I mean, I coached in college a long time. And it was like a recruiting dinner. Mm-hmm. And not that we were recruiting them, but we was more kind of selling them on what my vision on defense, Zach's vision as the team. Hey, here's what we're trying to do. We had some momentum coming out of the 2020 season. Mm-hmm. You know, we had won some games and made some inroads there. I still think if Joe doesn't get hurt that year, we probably win, I don't know, 6, 7, 8 games maybe. Hmm. So we were on the right trajectory. And then when we started adding players like Mike and Trey and Cheeto and the Vaughn, you know, the year before and, you know, and the guys we added on offense. So that was one of those, I'll tell that story forever. Like it started kind of here, you know. And I know those guys got a great feel for it too. So
go back to Mike coming across your desk. Was it – you sat in a free agency meeting and you had just gotten on your first season. So how did you, I guess, set up that list of, because you had a lot of positions you wanted to revamp per se. How'd you start with your list and how did Mike end up here?
Well, really kind of easy for me because, you know, we obviously play Pittsburgh twice a year. So we watched. We're following them a lot, so we're always watching their defense because they're playing the same team. So, you know, he sticks out like a sore thumb, obviously. And so we all had I had a great idea of what Mike was able to do. And when it did come up, and, you know, I'm good friends with his agent as well, and our people did a great job of, you know, making it happen. And, you know, the rest is history. That was an easy one. Yes, I said fast. I didn't have to watch the tape because I already watched the tape.
So, got it.
Yeah.
What is your favorite Mike Hilton story? Do you have any untold stories?
I don't know. There's a lot. I just think that the best thing for me as a coach is and just a guy is every day in the locker room, every day in our meeting room is what is the joy for me. You know, I was just telling somebody the other day on the phone, I'm like, the players are here. It's like, it just makes the day go faster. Yep. It makes the day is better because we interact. And the way we are here is different than a lot of teams, you know, just as tight as we are as a group. These guys know, like I tell them all the time, like when we're just getting these rookies kind of, and these new guys kind of adjusted to how we do things. I tell them, hey, this is our living room, you know, and we're going to air our differences out in this meeting room because every family has their issues at certain points of the year, blah, blah, blah. And those are the things that make what we do great. And I'll lean on him, you know, hey, what do you think about this? Maybe a situation where we're dealing with a player, maybe didn't do something right, and he'll come and give me his truthful opinion. And I won't necessarily listen to all the players' opinions, but the ones I trust, which is most of our team, and guys like Mike, you know, that to me. So there's not one story, I'd say. It's the sideline banter.
Yeah, that's always. That's every Sunday.
Yeah, it's all of it, you know, it's all of it.
What on the field, though, if you had to pick one play, I know he's – scratching the surface, hopefully, of what he's going to do in Cincinnati. What's the one play when, if someone were to explain, like ask you, tell me about Mike Hilton. Like, what's the first play that pops in your head?
I just showed it the other day to the team. So, I mean, there's a ton of plays, but the one, let's go two. I'll give you two. Both Tennessee, one playoff game last year, or two years ago, whatever it is, right? We blitz, tips it, catches it. The only thing I was mad at him is he didn't score.
I was tired.
He was tired.
I was tired.
I think Ryan got it.
He did. He did.
Ryan's fast, though, so I'll give you that.
X receiver.
And then this year at Tennessee, we have, you know, we like to blitz him, obviously, and he was doing a good job, as he always does, disguising it. But the quarterback saw him and said, you know, hey, watch the Nick coming. Said it. Mm-hmm. Mike blitzed and TFL Derrick Henry in the backfield for a 3-yard loss. So they knew he was coming. Still got the job done, you know. The Buffalo game, how we harassed the quarterback and all that he does. So all that stuff makes Mike.
So is there, with the way that he uses you, if you're looking at your stat sheet and you see how many sacks you had in Pittsburgh compared to here, you could say that your sack numbers are down a little bit, but. Yeah. That's not because, like he's saying, you're disguising the blitz. Like, he blitzes you a lot.
Yeah.
That's not an indictment of how often you're getting
your blitz, right? It's kind of just like how my career is going. Like, you make more plays, teams are going to recognize you. Teams are going to prepare for you. And obviously, you know, all my success that I had in Pittsburgh blitzing and coming here and having that success, you know, teams are going to be aware of where 21 is. And Lou understand that he knows the right times to let me go be a playmaker. He knows, even if I'm not blitzing, just me showing is going to have that offense so worried where somebody else can get a one-on-one matchup and they can go in and make the play. So it's just like, you know, I know where I am in this league and I know how teams respect me. So whether I'm making the play or not, it doesn't bother me.
What is having a player with Mike's skill set allow you to do, and do you feel like he revitalized the nickel position a little bit?
Yeah, for us, for sure. You know, I just think, as he just mentioned, he sets, not only does he do a great job when he's asked to be at the point of attack and make plays, you know, part of what you're talking about with the some of the sacks, because he's around the quarterback all the time when he blitzes, but we're calling a lot of those run blitzes sometimes, mm-hmm. and we're calling them on run downs, and they happen to run the ball. So he's got a bunch of TFLs that way too. So it's not necessarily, you know, maybe the numbers are down. I don't look at that stuff, but
the impact is still there.
Is huge. And like he said, you know, the protection is going to go his way because they know he's coming, you mm-hmm. know? I just think he sets other guys up too. So think Buffalo. He shows off the edge. The quarterback checks the protection to him, Vaughn, and Vaughn comes free and gets a sack.
First drive of the series.
Yep. Yeah. And it was like, there it is. There's Mike in a nutshell.
Got it. I'll have to go back and watch that now. You can recite it off the top of your head. Yeah.
We remember these things like moms remember, like my baby's first.
Yeah, exactly.
You give me a play, I'll tell you. I said something this morning about Mike Thomas in 2013. I remember like it was yesterday.
Yeah.
So, a question that I wanted to ask you, and I asked him a little bit, but what made you decide you wanted to be a coach?
Every time you stop playing, you know, you always want to be around it. And I remember it's a long time ago now, I was standing at a Jet practice, and Bill Parcells was the head coach. And he was talking to all of the visiting kind of coaches. I just started. I was at the Merchant Marine Academy or something, Division III school. And he goes, hey, beats 9 to 5 all day, every day. you know, just you're out here coaching, you're enjoying it. And, you know, my dad was a high school basketball. My dad was a really good, played Division I basketball and coached high school basketball. So it was kind of always in me. He was a teacher, principal. So I always thought I'd be a high school teacher and a high school football coach, you know, growing up. I thought that's what I wanted to do. And then I was like, yeah, I think I can do maybe a little bit better than this. So, and just kept going. So.
Well, but it's one thing to say that, but then, I mean, think of how many people are you that don't end up a defensive coordinator and hopefully soon to be a head coach.
Hopefully, maybe not hopefully.
So how did you – where do you feel like you really made your mark as a coach to transition to the NFL side of things?
I think it was all those years I was coaching in college. I would always come and visit guys that I knew in the league. So to always kind of stay up with, hey, what's the difference between what we're doing in college and what's happening in the NFL? And so when I got my first opportunity at the Dolphins, you know, it was like, okay, I already know what's going on. Now it's just a matter of how the player is going to react to, you know, the coaching style. And
who was the head coach that hired you?
Joe Philbin. Okay. Joe, the Dolphins. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, and so, you know, once you realize it's just football all over again, it's not, these guys aren't, it's, you know, you have this vision of what it might be, but it's football. And they, as long as these guys, I've always said it to younger coaches, as long as the players know that what you're telling them is going to help them get better and make them a better player, they'll listen to you all day, every day. If you're not truthful, there's some gray to what you're saying, they'll see that out in a minute, and that's some of the coaches that have trouble. So be direct, be demanding, and know what you're talking about, and you'll have a pretty good career.
And that's him in a nutshell. You know, that's how he is as a coach. He's going to tell us exactly how he wants it done, and we know he's going to put us in the right position to make the play. We just have to make it, and that's the trust that we have in Lou and the trust he has in us.
No, so I asked Cam, did he have like a welcome to the NFL moment, and you reciting things you say to Cam Taylor Britt might be like favorite part of my press conferences.
Explicit.
It's just so funny when he's just like, don't ever do that again. Yeah. But did you ever have a moment where when you're saying, you know, you have to be direct, that you almost came off as like too much Johnny Tough coach and it didn't go well for you?
Yeah, I think earlier in my career, I would say that I have way more of a filter and knowing when to push buttons and knowing when not to. And that just comes with experience. Yep. I think all of us as players, as coaches, you know, you just learn. You learn. And it's not always the hammer always, you know, because some guys just can't take it all the time.
Exactly.
And to me, it's always been get after him, but then go give him a hug and let him know, hey, I'm doing this because you're not going to have any chance to do it right if you keep doing it the way you were doing it. Mm-hmm. So just listen to what I'm telling you, you know, blah, blah, blah. But yeah, you definitely have to, you know, kind of change up your approach sometimes.
Mm-hmm. You have a moment that sticks out to you about how you're saying he's just direct, but you've seen people really resonate with his messaging well that comes to mind?
Not really all off top. It's just, even if we're having a bad half, especially as the secondary, like he's really involved with the secondary. Mm-hmm. And we can say we give up an explosive play, you know, he might snap, but he's like, all right, guys, let's just settle down. Let's play our game, you know, make our right calls, make our right checks, and just make plays. And when your coach is not, when your coach is in your ear like that, and it gives you that positivity, like you said, it's all about how you direct your players, you know what I mean? Hammer or just an easy push to the side. You know, Lou, he knows how to balance everybody.
So I feel like I have to ask. I mean, you're becoming like famous for your game plans and how multiple they are. And I feel like that's become the new shtick for people when they talk about you. Do you just like in the off season, like how do you come up with that many different ways to attack an offense? Like, I mean, like you're saying, football's not hard, right? Like it's been played for a very long time. So there's only so many different things you can do on the defensive side of the ball.
Yep.
So how do you feel like you're able to come up with these game plans that work at the right time that haven't been seen by multiple people. Like, I just find that fascinating that you seem to have so many different game plans, but it's like, well, how has somebody else not been doing that before?
I mean, I think there's plenty of good coaches out there, obviously. But I think for us, when it comes down to it, is we've been together now for a while. Mm-hmm. And so we can talk at halftime and say, hey, listen, this ain't working. Remember when we did this?
Like, might not practice throughout the week.
We're doing it. And they'll be like, oh, yeah, okay. You know, like we had a simple little adjustment during the Cleveland game where we changed a blitz pattern because it wasn't working. So I'm like, hey, just when we see this, do this. And they're like, okay. You know, and then we can just kind of play off of – I mean, we have our stuff that we do, mm-hmm. and we're going to do it because we do it well. And then we just have little things off of it that may look the same, but it's different. Yep. You know, mm-hmm. and that to me, especially with the quarterbacks we have to face, you know, we've got to keep those guys off balance. Yep. And that's a big part of my job is Sundays really trying to get that guy to be uncomfortable mm-hmm. and not – okay, I know what's coming. Because it's like baseball. If they know the fastball's coming, they're going to hit it, you know, into the second row, you know. So just trying to keep them off balance.
I should know if you have like a book that you just hit in the summer that's just like all these different defensive packages. And like 1 week you're like, oh, here's my binder of all the ones that I – like your bag of tricks per se.
We have some stuff that we're working on for sure. We did a little something today actually. Again, it's more of right who we playing, what are they present, what are the issues they're presenting, mm-hmm. and how do we stop those major issues? You know, mm-hmm. you know, we have a saying. It's like, you know, we got to nail the things we know they're going to do. Whatever they're good at, we got to stop that, yep. and then whatever else they do different, we have rules that will handle all of it. So, you know, this should never be. Like Mike said, you know, there should never be anybody running free in right. the secondary. Like, you know, things are going to happen. It's the NFL. You know, people score points these days. But, you know, we should be close to guys. And when we're not, that's when I get that's a little problem. Agitated.
How do you feel – how long do you feel like it takes you to get to know the type of player you're coaching when you're saying he can handle harsh criticism versus I might need to be a little bit more gentle? Like, how long does that take you to figure out?
Yeah, pretty quick for me. You know, you can see whether it's, you know, body movements or reaction or just facial reactions mm-hmm. or how did they handle that, you know, or did they just, you know, take it, you know? And again, I think you just get a feel for that as each guy's so different, you know? Mm-hmm. So some guys can, some guys can't.
Do you ever think about wanting to go into coaching?
I have. You know, there might be something I do down the line.
Yeah, he's coming with me.
I gladly take that if you want me to take him with
me. Not yet.
But, you know, obviously I will still want to be around the game. And I know how much the coaches put into you know, preparation for the players.
Is
and
that
game
the
plan.
Main reason why you wouldn't is the hours?
I think so. Just because I did it so much as a player, you know, I definitely want to take some time away, but stay involved in it. Maybe so. Coaching is up in the air right now, so we'll see. Okay. Let's see.
Well, so that's such a common thing, right? Like people talk about how much coaches work during the season.
They work way more than us, and that's what people don't understand.
Can you like break it down a week schedule for our listeners who don't know how much time coaches actually spend? Yeah. Getting ready for the game, etc. What's your week like?
I mean, so I used to tell when my kids were younger, I would tell them when the season started, I'd say, I'll see you in the spring. You know, and I was kidding, but I wasn't. You know, and I tell them, hey, we're going to spend more time together than we are with our own family. Mm-hmm. So that's why our place is such a pleasure. You know, every day is like, I walk by the lockers, I'm like, oh, that's a good guy. You know, we don't have that other issue in our building. So, I mean, you know, we play the game on Sunday.
I heard Zach Taylor likes the Brussels sprout salad from Eno. He picks that up.
I like that.
After games. I think I read that somewhere before the Super Bowl. What is kind of like your post-game Cincinnati
pasta
thing?
Meatballs. She's in town, which she always is during the season, she's cooking.
Or, I bet she has a sauce recipe that I would love to have, but I definitely couldn't make on my own.
No, no, no. It's very simple.
Okay, as long as it's like dummy proof in the kitchen.
Yes, she got it from her father. My mother's very similar. So, but yeah, so I'm eating pasta, meatballs, whatever she's making. I'm destroying when I get
home. How does she do that? Because if she's at the game.
That's how fast it is. So either it's
I really do need this recipe now.
So she'll do some stuff before we go, and then, well, they're usually.
Tailgating,
yeah, yeah. Or at one of those bars.
I really want to go sometime. Yeah. I've heard it's a blast.
So Mondays we'll get in early. We'll watch the tape from the game. If we're traveling, we'll watch it on the plane on our iPads. So if we're home, I just wait till the morning and just watch it. And then we meet with the coaches. We meet. We have all kinds of meetings before the players ever get there to kind of say, hey, here's what happened in the game. Here's what went good. Here's what went wrong. Get the statistical stuff and then move on to the players come in and then coaches will watch it with them. I'll show them, hey, here's our goals. We didn't hit this. We got to do this better, that better. Then the coaches will show them the tape.
As the DC, do you kind of pop into every position room?
Sometimes, sometimes. I mean, I trust our coaches. We got great, great coaches. So I'm usually using that time to prep for something else. I like getting on the next opponent quick. So while they're showing these guys the tape, I'm already working on something for the next opponent. So I would say Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday are the longest nights. Mm-hmm. But I also believe, you know, I want to be like on top of it. I want to be quick and to the point, but not sacrificing any of the preparation. So like I know this, our guys aren't forced to stay all these late hours if they don't need to. We'll break a defensive meeting, let's just say at 8:30 at night. Mm-hmm. And then if whatever individual work they have to do, they can go do so they can get home in a reasonable hour. Because if we're exhausted, then we're going to have no juice for the guys in mm-hmm. the morning. And to me, that's so important. So, you know, everybody's in there early. You know, the 14, 15, whatever hours it is, whatever, it's part of it. Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, we try to like, we're going to get off the field. We're going to watch the tape and hopefully everybody's home by 6, 7
o'clock. Thursday night football.
I want everybody out, you know, and so you can decompress a little bit. Fridays are great.
Fridays in and out.
Fridays are great for me too.
Players are done by noon. Yep. You know, I'll stay, most of the coaches, that's my day where I'll sit and redo the red zone. I don't even tell Mike. I redo the third down red zone on my own. I just sit in my office, turn the radio on and kind of go through some situations on my own. And I have my call sheet, so I'll make little notes on my own. And I'll be home by 3-4 o'clock. And then Saturday, if we're home, it's
all day pretty much.
It's all day home. So we get a break at the end of the week to kind of build ourselves back up. Mm-hmm. But the early days are long.
Do you feel like COVID has kind of changed the long theory that I feel like coaches had this thing that they defend their desks and you got to be here. If you leave any earlier than 10 on a Monday or Tuesday, that's like forbidden. Like, did COVID change any of that with the ability to do Zoom or just kind of teaching the mindset of some from the Stone Age that you can do your work at home and still be very productive?
I mean, I think we've all become more comfortable if we're not, like if something pops up. You know, I remember, like, I don't think I've ever not come to work, ever. Like, I've been coaching a long time.
Right.
I don't think I've had a sick day. I'm not bragging. Yeah. I'm just saying.
Good for you.
So, like, I'm during the season, mm-hmm. right? Let's talk, you know, like, nobody's missing work.
Oh, no, you've been sick because you've had times in your press conference where you make it known.
Yeah.
Please.
Yeah, stay away. I'm trying to help you.
Yeah, step away.
But now you don't feel like if it's a spring thing, something pops up, we all have stuff going on. Like if we had to Zoom something, we're all comfortable with it now. Mm-hmm. Whereas like what you said Zoom to me, you know, before the COVID, nope, I don't even know what you're talking about. So maybe that part of it, but no, I just think we do what we do and, you know, we just keep being on point and it's working.
What is the most gratifying part of being a coach at the level that you are?
Again, I think working at the highest level of a profession, working with the players that are at their peak of their sport, the best in the world, I like that. I like that challenge of dealing with the elite, the best people. I don't mean that in a, you know, mm-hmm. whatever way. It's just they're the best players in the world. And you're dealing with the best coaches. You're going against the best coaches. Mm-hmm. So it's a challenge. I think we're all competitive people growing up yep. and all the sports that we did or whatever it was, you know, you're always trying to win. And so that's a big part of it.
What questions do you have for him? I'll let you hit the mic for a little bit.
All right. All right. You kind of took a lot of them, but just, you know, tell us about the rookies. How you feel about the rookies coming in? Yeah. You know, our first three, we're all defensive guys, all big schools, all playmakers. So how do you feel about them guys?
I mean, as you know, we haven't done too much, right. but I do like what I see so far. You know, Miles is coming up, you know, Hobbs drills that he's doing.
Explosive. He's explosive. He can get around the
explosive.
Edge.
Yeah. You know, he's got length. You know how it is with the D line. We'll see when the pads come on.
Yeah, for sure.
He's shown that he'll do that in college. So, and then DJ Jordan Battle, both have impressed out there. So, I'm so far so good. Knock on wood. There, I think we've done a good job. And even DJ Ivy, you know, the late round pick. Has shown that he can move around and in your guys' drills and stuff. So, you know, this is a hard time of the year because it's just shorts and T-shirts. Mm-hmm.
Can't really get
there's going to be guys I learned a long time ago.
Yeah.
You're going to fall in love with some guys.
Training camp all-star. Doesn't even make the team. Yeah.
And you just don't know until they got to tackle somebody.
Right.
And, you know, but right now, things are looking good.
I was going to ask, since you're talking about the rookies, how nice is it? And I know you don't listen too much to what is said outside, but of course, when you think about the Bengals outside, the first thing is the offense, right? Just because they're the stars on the Bengals are on offense. Not saying that you're not a star,
no.
The general.
You see who on the side on the stadium. All those guys.
So, of course, most of the attention comes on offense, but back to back years now, draft has been heavily focused on the defense. Like, how nice is it for you in a like the offense is what people are all jazzed up about, but inside the building they don't get caught up on offense that they still view defense as something that is still really important.
Yeah, thank God. You know, we know we've got some we're pretty good quarterback check, three wideouts check, you know. So we picked up Orlando Brown in free agency. So I just think Duke and our organization has done a great job of like one year we went with these guys and did all the free agency on defense. We're a little bit heavier on offense. So I think we've played well off that and you know, it's just a way you got to – we do a great job of building the roster, and I think that's a big part of it.
Well,
I feel like they're building the roster the right way. Obviously, like you said, we got the monsters on offense, but the whole front office and those coaches are finding the right guys defensively to – we might not have the star power, but you can ask some of our guys on the offense. Like, we feel like we're the heartbeat of the team. They get all the pub and everything, but – the defense, we feel like we carry this team, and you know it's just who we are as a defense, and we take pride in it.
Yeah, for sure.
Tell us about the head coaching process the last couple of years. You enjoy it?
Yeah, I do. It's a different deal. I will say this year there was no like. You know, we lose a really, really tough game in Kansas City, you know, which it's over, right? So it just goes from we're running for 6 months and then all of a sudden it's done. So I'm sitting on the bus I'm starving. I was cold, all of that, pissed off, the whole nine yards. And then I get a call from my agent saying, hey, you know, this is going to happen here in 2 days or whatever it was. And I was like, oh, okay, great. You know, so I was excited, but by the same token, you know, worn out, you know, but it was great. You know, each of the last 2 years had a chance and, you know, we'll see.
It's so crazy how fast, I mean, going back to before your first season here as the DC, what was that jump like for you to go from being a position coach to a defensive coordinator at the NFL level? And now 4 years later, you're going from defensive coordinator to hopefully a head coach someday. Like, I feel like life's come at you fast, quick here.
Yeah. I just think I always, again, you guys know me. I'm not this big ego guy or anything, but I've always kind of viewed myself as always seeing the big picture when I was a DB coach, because you have to, you know? So, okay, I would maybe do this different or that different if I was a coordinator. And so I kind of had a vision of what I wanted to do. So, and then doing the same thing now, you know, Zach and I talk every day about certain things and, hey, you know, how are you thinking about handling this situation, that situation? And then, you know, really just not, to me, it's, you got to hire good coaches, which we have done here, as you see all of our guys getting interviewed. And you don't micromanage those guys. You hire them to do a job. You got to let them coach. And to me, that's a big part of it as a head coach too. You hire the right guys. And then, you know, you let them do their jobs. And it's the nature of our beast now. If they're not doing their jobs, we're all, you know, could get cut one day. Yeah. So that's just inevitable. It's just how it is. But, you know, I think that that's a big part of it.
He knows selfishly. We've had some conversations during this whole process. Selfishly, I don't want him to go, but obviously it's a better opportunity for him. And, you know, like I said, hopefully he'll be here for the next couple of years. But that's a good thing about our coaching staff. Like, over our success over these last 2 years, usually a lot of coaches get plucked off the team, those teams, and go somewhere else. But we've been able to keep this core together for a long time. And, you know, that shows just great stability around this organization.
Before we let you go, I want to ask you some non-football Cincinnati questions. What are some of your favorite restaurants in Cincinnati?
I got a good one right underneath my building. Rosie's Cocktails and Pies, good pizza, good pasta. Cocktails. Anthony over there that runs that place, it's pretty good. I like that place a lot. It's my go-to because it's right down in my building, but it's really good. So, obviously, Ruby's. When my wife's not in town, I'm not cooking, I'm walking somewhere, and I can walk to Ruby's and eat. Again, great, great food over there too. So those would be my two top go-tos, I would say.
What about you? What are your favorite restaurants?
E&O, number three.
Do you get the Brussels sprout salad?
I do sometimes. Not as much as Zach.
Obviously said the Precinct, that's one. And if you don't know about Swamp Water Grill, it's over in Kentucky. If you like char grill oysters, some type of seafood, Swamp Water Grill is low key, but it's one of those you must have.
Okay.
Shout out to Swamp Water.
That's good to know. Yeah. I'm glad you told me because I didn't know. Because I love all that.
They got what you need at Swamp Water.
Okay.
What do you like to do in the off season when you're not coaching football?
So we'll spend a lot of time. My sons like to play golf, so we'll golf. Just hang out.
How's your game?
Yeah, you know, I'm all right. I'm good enough.
Who's the best golfer, whether it be coach or player?
I know it's a lot of us that golf, but
yeah, I don't know
who would be the number one.
Yeah, I know Duke's pretty good on the personnel side. I'm not sure, to be honest. We've only done a handful of coaching golfing things. You know, everybody's about the same, I think.
I asked pretty good. Joe Burrow last year if he would ever do the match, the whole, like, last year it was Tom Brady and Aaron versus Pat and Josh. And I asked him, I was like, you know, would you ever do that? And he basically said, like, I'm not good enough at golf to go out there and look like a fool no matter how much they're paying me. So that was pretty interesting. That's because Mike said he's a beast on the ping pong table. So I'm kind of shocked that he's not good at golf too.
Everybody's good on ping pong in our locker room for some reason.
Yeah,
you ever get on the table?
No, I see them play. I'm
gets
good.
A little hectic.
I'm good. I'm just right here. These guys are
diving on the floor.
Yeah, they're athletic.
Fresh after practice, already sweating. They gonna take the stuff off, go right on the table, start sweating again. Like, I think it's good competition. It gets their blood flowing.
So you like to golf. What else?
Beach, love the beach. Hanging out.
You're into watching fighting, boxing.
Like
might have
boxing.
Said it wrong.
Yeah, I do like
which one?
No, I like boxing.
UFC is now, boxing.
I'm okay in the UFC, but I'm always been an old school boxing guy. I love boxing. So,
you always show us.
Ali was on last
film.
Night. I was watching Ali with Will Smith. You know, just because
just one of those great. Classics.
Yeah, it's a classic. But I just love. Those guys are, you talk about mentally tough. Oh, my God.
And he's shown us a bunch of just old boxing clips from different boxers and just how they withstand, you know, haymakers and how they bounce back at the end of the round to still win. So
I just, you know, little things like, you know, when you don't think you got enough, when you think you're done on the field,
it's always a little more.
There's always a little bit more. Yeah, I mean, or Vander Holyfield, or one of those guys that, and I'll show it to him. You know, it's just like you got a little more. Just go ahead and do it
every Saturday meeting. Yeah, every Saturday meeting.
That's awesome. That's awesome. Well, we appreciate you so much taking some time to come in and join us. We could talk to you for another hour, but we know you have lots to do. So thanks so much for joining us. And we will be on next week. Look forward to talking to you guys then.
We gotta find the next guest. You don't know yet.
We gotta find the next
We have an idea.
Oh, all right.